What's up, you guys? My name's Aisha.
I'm Sydney.
And you're listening to your local brown girl podcast. I did not sing the name of the podcast.
Yes, amazing.
This is our Le Twice. This is our second attempt at the podcast.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Today we're going to be talking about white savior complexes. And Sydney and I are both not 100% Caucasian women. Just as a disclaimer, this is called Your Local Brown Girl Podcast, so if you did think we were, maybe start adjusting your attitude on life, babe, because I think you might be finding some disappointment elsewhere. Personally, I was born in Pakistan, immigrated here around age 3, and I didn't really know anything about a white savior complex, anything about that ideology until I started getting more into activism in high school. And now that I have and, like, kind of educated myself on, in case you don't really know what white saviorism is, mission trips and the kind of overarching issue that the Democratic Party has with their white members and even, like, white anarchists. Like, basically anything on the left side of the political aisle that has to do with white people, we kind of want to talk about how there's been a divide there between people of color and white people. Because, whoo, girl, there's been some sort of miscommunication.
Yeah.
I think I'll take it away right now, personally, and then I'll just pose it as a question, kind of, to Miss Sydney, and you can talk to us more about your relationship with race and how that kind of plays into your thought process behind it. Because, you know, you guys know Sydney. She's been on the podcast before. She's on one of our most popular episodes, actually. Do you remember what we were talking about?
I think it was cancel culture.
Yeah, cancel culture. Yeah. I was gonna say it might have been the one about siblings, but no, it was cancel culture, which is, it's a heavy one, and y'all liked it, so clearly she did something right. But personally, I think a good example to kind of set up what I'm trying to talk about, just because not a lot of people know about the concept of white saviorism or whatever you would call it. Atticus Finch, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh my god, yeah.
That man.
That's like peak white savior.
Peak white savior. All right, if you have somehow lived under the rock of Patrick Starr the past couple years and don't know who Atticus Finch is, and you love To Kill a Mockingbird, there's going to be a caveat to this in a couple seconds. So, like, hold on to your horses. Don't rate me 0 stars yet. Like, just hold on for a sec. He is this lawyer who is supposed to defend Tom Robinson, I believe his name is, who is on trial for raping a lower income white woman. Actually, like, basically the way her family is portrayed in the story by Harper Lee, they're like the lowest of the low. And the reason she does that is to kind of, like, demonstrate that you could be the lowest of the low in white society, but as long as you're white, you'll still be respected more than black people. So Tom Robinson was black, and Atticus is white. He is, like, considered the sophisticated, like, clean-cut, well-read, single father, which is very interesting, because the story was written in, like, the 50s, 60s, something like that. It's an old piece of writing, and that's kind of my caveat to it, is that since it is so old, so sorry for that interruption, guys. All right, we had to leave. We had business to attend to. And now my air filter is going crazy. Let's just all meditate. Let's all focus. White savior complex. So yeah, Atticus gets all this praise and stuff for being this lawyer in this super conservative town. And even one of the lines in the movies is his daughter is told by a black man while they're in the courthouse right after Tom Robinson is shockingly found guilty. So yeah, Addison praised a bunch and everything, but yeah, did not get the verdict that he was hired to get. So, even, I don't even know if he was hired, but people should not have been praising him, basically is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And a black man in the courthouse next to Atticus's daughter is like, "Scout, stand up. Your father's coming by," as a sign of respect. And I think that's a really good framing of the white savior complex, because these black people in this courthouse are supposed to be, you know, respecting the hell out of Atticus Finch right now. And, like, it's supposed to be this heartwarming moment for the audience. Meanwhile, Tom Robinson dies the next day in the story because he runs away and he gets shot.
Yeah.
But after that, Atticus, his family, their narrative continues. It's written from a white perspective, But yeah, a white perspective. It's written from a white point of view because that's the most marketable one that anyone could even think of at the time. So yeah, that's my little caveat, which is that it was older. So that's why it has like some credit, I guess, for even attempting a narrative beyond just the one that we've seen in pop culture back then. But even then, even now, come on, because we're still reading To Kill a Mockingbird in high schools.
Yeah.
Like sophomore year around, that's when the curriculum recommends it. And To Kill a Mockingbird is a huge part of modern diaspora's conversation because people are trying to ban it from libraries and stuff, and people think it's this symbol that black people should love and should praise, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's nothing. It's just another white man who didn't do his job.
Yeah.
So why should we care? Why should we stand up for him? Like, we didn't stand up for the other lawyer.
No.
So let's, you know, get out of our own asses and stop caring about people that we've always been caring about, you know? Like, you're not shifting the focus, which is the whole point of being anti-racist, is to shift the focus back onto minorities who need your help.
Yeah.
So that's my own personal starting point of, I guess, what bloomed into me understanding, like, why mission trips are bad or why white anarchism isn't what it looks like on the surface once you really go deeper into it. How about you, Sydney? What's your kind of starting point?
I would say, like, the starting point was probably middle school because that's when I got really into, like, activism and started to actually learn about that whole world because of the election, 2016 election. But, like, even back then, I didn't really understand how bad the problem with, like, this white savior complex and, like, white liberalism was.
Like, I had no idea that was even an issue in middle school.
Me either. Like, I really thought, like, as long as you are liberal on the left, then you're good. But it's actually almost, honestly, worse, in my opinion, to be a white liberal and pretend to be fighting on behalf of, like, these marginalized communities. But in reality, you're not. Like, you're honestly being more harmful. Whereas if you're a conservative white person, like, still fuck you, but...
At least white conservatives don't know.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a liberal and you're fighting this fight every time you go into the ballot box, like, that's the whole idea of liberalism, is we're the party of progress. Or I guess I should say the Democratic Party, since we've strayed so much. That sounds weird even just associating the two with each other, but... if the idea behind the Democratic Party is that every time you're in the ballot box, you're fighting for progress, you want the country to move forward, it's supposed to be a more lenient view of the Constitution, all this stuff, that means that you know and you address the issues that are in the country. So if you know and you address these issues, then how can you still be able to go to establishments that support white supremacy? How are you able to have conversations with your white supremacist boyfriend?
Yeah.
How are you able to use your white supremacy cloaked as liberalism as a college essay to get you a full ride into American university?
Yeah.
That might be a direct call out to a specific white liberal that I know.
Yeah.
But that person, let's call them Andrew, that's so funny because a white liberal that I know's name is Andrew, but Andrew's beautiful. Andrew's great.
Andrew.
But this is not Andrew. This is the fake name for the person I'm talking about is Andrew. Say Andrew, super progressive to the point where they're telling people of color that they're not in the right position in the movement.
Yeah.
That's not really your position to be
having.
That's
my problem. Is like, if you see people on the left who are white, and they've taken over the movement is what's happening, and they're literally bashing people of color for not being, like, super radical or radical.
Who've been working on it years before them.
The people who have been a part of the movement and started the movement were people of color. And white people are just now starting to really understand that and join
especially
the
in the younger our generation.
Yeah. And it's honestly, like, I love that our generation is so open-minded and liberal-minded. But it's also kind of bad because these young white liberals are trying to take over this movement. And
that's not about you.
Yeah, exactly. And they're silencing the voices of the people who are actually being heard. So,
I think one good example of that is media. Have you heard of The Help?
Mm-hmm.
That movie?
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. I was literally just thinking about
it. That movie missed so fucking hard. Okay. here's a little summary of, do you want to give a summary of The Help?
I can try my best. I think I read the book in middle school, and then
then you know more than I do.
Basically, I've got to think though, because it's a little bit. It's basically about these two black, I think that they're like nannies or housekeepers, working for these white families, and just their experiences working for these like blatantly racist people. And then this young white woman who's like a journalist or is trying to break into the world of journalism wants to write a book about their experiences, but they have to keep it anonymous, obviously, or they're gonna get
lynched.
Lynched.
Point blank period.
Yeah, I was like, should I say
maybe even babe, this is rated E for explicit, so we can say things that people are actually still experiencing.
Yeah, but basically another really good example of white savior, because this white journalist is the one who everyone is like, oh my god, like, good for her, she's like supporting these black housekeepers, like getting their story out there. But
what's crazy,
one
of the people that she interviewed, she didn't get their permission to publish the book, because the black woman in question who did not want her publishing her information was because she thought that she was portrayed in such an embarrassing and patronizing, degrading light. She felt embarrassed by the way that white woman portrayed her, and the white woman didn't care.
Yeah.
Because it was about the buck for her.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when she gets her royalties, that black woman that she left behind is still going to be fighting racism.
Yeah.
And is still going to be fighting all the battles that that white woman found her with. So now that white girl is richer. She has more notoriety, she's got clout, she's vibing, she's doing everything. Obviously, this did not take place in a time when we said people were vibing or that they were chasing clout, but this is essentially what she was doing. And now, this black woman is left behind with less than she even began with.
Yeah.
And that's what white saviorism is about. It's about taking away from people of color with the mask that you're giving.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so much more despicable than any other form of, I guess you could say, conservative policy or conservative activism, in my personal opinion. I know there are people that are like, obviously they're not doing the right thing, but at least they have that mask that is kind of fighting for the same thing that we're fighting for. And I'm like, is that really what we're settling for now?
I know. Like, people of color are expected to settle constantly. So it's like, white people will do the bare minimum, and we're expected to be happy with that. And then they actually like get upset when we're like, no, you need to do more, because they expect to be able like to do the bare minimum and be praised for it, honestly. Yeah.
Exactly like that scene of To Kill a Mockingbird, where you're expected to stand up and honor a white person for literally not doing anything.
Not even doing his job.
Literally not doing a damn thing. Not even doing the bare minimum. And when you tell them, that's not something I'm comfortable doing because this is something my people have been doing much better than yours for ages, and no one has given us an ounce of the same recognition.
Yeah.
They get mad, and they're like, well, what do you want from me? Like, they throw a little hissy fit. Yeah. Like, this isn't really fair because I'm trying my best. And I hate to do, you know, the white girl voice on you, but don't... What's it called? When you, like, are the thing that you're making fun of, or you are the thing that you're angry at. There's, like, a specific phrase I'm thinking of, but, like... It's like, who smelt it, Delta? No. It is not who smelt it, Delta. It's, I don't know. I don't know what this phrase is, but it's some sort of motif. It's not a motif. AP Lit really got me going off. Yeah. I said, it's a motif, actually. It's like a phrase, and it is really summing up what I'm trying to do. But it's like, if you're the issue, then I'm not going to be able to get rid of the fact that I can't think of it. What is it?
Should I look it up?
Maybe. I don't even know what you would look up, though. Like, what even is the thesis here?
For...
It's like... What? Oh, wait. Like, oh my god. It's kind of like... Before you look at other people, look at yourself, but also not that. Just within that. I feel like someone's listening right now and they know what I'm talking about. And they're, like, screaming it.
And they're, like, yelling, yeah.
This is so embarrassing right now. but I'm gonna realize it and I'll put it in the description of the podcast when I upload it. If I remember, because I don't edit these, so I could totally forget. But if I don't, it'll be in the description. And if I did, it won't. So y'all can go look. If there's nothing there, not even me mentioning it, that means that I forgot about this section of the podcast completely. So my bad. But whatever that phrase was gonna be, it was really gonna sum up my conversation really well. But personally for me, I can only really speak from that perspective of just a brown girl trying her best, because I definitely do have white friends that are on the liberal spectrum, but they're not the type of people who pretend like they're doing something that they're not. They don't pretend like they're saving an entire race when in reality, you know, they're maybe donating $5 to a bail fund. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't expect more for what they're doing, and that's kind of where my issue is. My issue isn't where you're with your skin color.
Yeah.
My issue is with the way that you're going about utilizing your skin color to get away with things.
Yeah.
But Sydney, however... Sydney, you're related. I hate to even bring this up. I hate to expose you.
Yeah. You're gonna have to, though.
You're related to white people.
I am.
That...
It's crazy.
Despicable.
Immediately.
Immediately get out. disappointing, I think, to say the least. No, I'm kidding, everyone. All of Sydney is actually great, and I'm not a raging racist. I actually... do not have anything against mixed people, except for the fact that they are the bane of our existence.
I do. Yeah.
OMG.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
No, you weren't. So we are trying to annihilate the white race.
That's the point of this podcast, actually, is to annihilate...
End it.
...the entire white race.
So, Sydney, from your perspective of having that relation to whiteness, I would think, it's kind of interesting because you've always felt like, not you specifically, but there's this narrative of always feeling like you don't belong to either side.
Yeah.
I'm not mixed. I kind of feel it with immigrating. Like, I don't really belong to America, but I also don't really belong to Pakistan. And I've definitely heard you talk about that with being half black and half white. Like, either race kind of rejecting you. It's kind of like that with black conservatism is, and that's why I think a lot of people... see it as like a white liberal complex, and then they run to conservatism because those white liberals creep them out.
Yeah.
Is because you don't feel like the Democratic Party wants you. So do you want to speak on that a little bit, of like the way the black people are treated by the Democratic Party or by liberals? Because it's fucked up.
Especially after this election. Because in the last one, I was 13, so I understood what was happening, but
have shit to do.
I didn't have all the knowledge I have now.
Yeah.
And so, like, with this election, I was really invested in it, and I knew a lot of stuff, and it was interesting to watch, but also sad, because the more you know about American politics, honestly, the more depressing it is.
Very ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. But, like, recently, I saw a tweet that I think we might have talked about in the group chat. I might have just talked about it with Mariah, though, but it was, like, this... I think he was either a senator or a congressman, and he was basically... saying that he did not agree with defunding the police, and he's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very weird to see that. Like, him, he straight up was like, and he said it in a very, like, inappropriate way.
Mm-hmm. Like, kind of making Twitter. Fun of it. Let's get politicians off Twitter. Another episode, but come on.
Yeah.
Get the fuck off.
And I think AOC quote tweeted it and, like, literally read his
ass.
But, like, just seeing that literally revealed how much the Democratic Party does not give a fuck about black people. Like, once they secure that vote, they are
out.
They're done with you. Because the black vote literally gave Biden the election. Like, if you look at the numbers, like...
Absolutely.
They flipped Georgia. They flipped Michigan. But then after that, after he won, once it was all settled, like...
No one gives a shit in terms of policy.
At all. Which is, like, so, in a sense, I understand why black people are so unwilling to just, like...
The wave of black conservatism.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even call it a wave, necessarily. It's definitely been something that's always been there.
Yeah.
But, like, why there is that kind of presence of Lil Wayne and presence of black people supporting Trump.
Yeah, because, I mean... it's been so long, and there's never been really much progress seen from the Democratic Party for the Black community.
If any.
Yeah. And there obviously isn't for the Republican Party either, but the Republican Party isn't, like, really pretending to fight for the Black community.
Exactly.
So I think that's the main difference, is the Democratic Party is yelling and screaming, oh my gosh, like,
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Like, we're fighting for you, and then they don't do anything.
But you're the reason why we're in the streets.
Exactly.
I think a good example of this is Joe Biden. Yeah. Whew, if you guys don't know about the Charlamagne interview, Joe Biden interview with Charlamagne, he said, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, if you are still an undecided voter, or if you don't vote for Biden in this election, you ain't Black.
You ain't Black.
He said that to Charlamagne's face.
Yeah.
He said that to Charlamagne's face, and if you can go look up that clip, girl, Charlamagne, he said, oh.
I don't know what I would have done.
He said, okay, but, like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, that was so bad. Yeah.
And this is coming from the man who drafted and sent that 94 crime bill. 84 is off. Not correct at all. The 1994 crime bill, that king really did imprison all those Black men for what? Oh, for being around marijuana. Oh, for the same thing that's legal for thousands of white suburban moms.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting. That's so funny. You don't think people are considered Black. You don't think people are considered their full identity if they don't vote for you. But they're supposed to vote for you after you imprisoned their brothers, their sisters, their mothers, their entire community, and brought shit tons of police and over-policing into their communities. So you want them... That's basically the premise of the entire Democratic Party. Like, if you don't vote for us, you ain't Black. So they make these people feel like traitors. They go to the conservative side. Meanwhile, what are they voting for? They're voting for policies that are against them in the first place.
Yeah.
And they can't have a conversation with white liberals because it's, like, so tense.
Yeah, that's so true. It's, like, they literally... The Democratic Party just expects Black voters to turn out for them. Like, they just expect it. Like, they don't really... They know that they don't have to fight on behalf of them because they're always going to get that vote because they don't have anywhere else to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
Pathetic, really, of an ideology just to think that there's a group of people that really... And that's the whole premise behind being a minority in America, is, like, you are always a tool first in the sphere of politics. And that's unfortunate, but it's not like there's nothing we can do about it. It's not like in the year 2020, presidential candidates need to be talking about how you are not Black if you don't vote for me.
Yeah.
But they're the same people that push legislation against Black people. And it can always be argued. There's so much nuance on this topic. So I definitely encourage you guys to do your own education and everything. But always in this podcast, I'm coming from my own opinion and perspective. And my guests are always doing the same. But it can always be argued that that crime bill wasn't targeted towards Black people. And that Biden's comment wasn't targeted towards being a white savior. But his, even if it wasn't the purpose, the intent behind it, his projection is indicative of an entire party that just believes that Black people have to vote for them and that they don't have to do anything in return. And because of that whole thing in return, that's kind of like where white liberals get fucked up, is what they think they're doing for people in return. And I think a good example of that, mission trips.
Oh my God.
I get so much shit whenever I talk about mission trips, because there's, like, that poverty porn of, like, a little starving Cambodian child. And it's, like, how can you ever argue against helping this baby?
Yeah.
But it's, like, I don't even need... Listen, I'm not Wikipedia. I'm not gonna spout a bunch of statistics at you about how mission trips are really not helping the countries they're going to. But... You can do that on your own time. But after doing that on my own and realizing that, I'm being like, fuck, this is fucked up. They're leaving these countries worse than the way they came to them. But they think that they're giving so much.
Yeah.
That's what kind of made me realize this is why white liberals stay the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are in this idea that they're giving so much and they love the idea of giving. It gives them, like, this ego boost, this confidence boost, this power dynamic. And so they surround themselves by with other white people that do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cycle never stops. So let's go back to Andrew, my fake Andrew here. I posted something on my story about Black Lives Matter. I don't remember what it was, but they were basically lecturing me about the struggles of women of color in America. And it was a white woman. Andrew is a white woman. That's right. Andrew is a white woman. Talking to me about the struggle of white women of color in America. And that was really awesome, personally speaking, because I am brown. I know this is really hard for you guys to hear. Yeah. So I have actually been oppressed.
Believe it or not.
Believe it or not, it is crazy to hear. But yeah, that's right. No one really likes that I'm here. So for me to have to be told that, look at this, you know, there's all these people that people don't want here, and your stance on Black Lives Matter isn't liberal enough or whatever.
Yeah.
And you are fighting against women of color. It was something related to Breonna Taylor. And I was like, okay, interesting thought process. So I really went into Andrew's account and kind of like was like, okay, what is making them think that this is something that's okay to say to anyone, let alone a minority?
Yeah.
So Babe does not have any friends of color. Maybe, I don't know, tan Italian, somewhere in there. But she does, in fact, surround herself with white people. She lives in one of the richest neighborhoods in our county. And she's going on a full scholarship, even though both of her parents are doctors.
Which is super fun.
Interesting.
But she does know everything there is to know about the oppressed groups in America. So, yeah.
Wait,
really
so
funny.
You surround yourself with whiteness, but you're supposed to tell me how whiteness is bad?
And I think, like, something that I've seen a lot, it's like they try and overcompensate for like being white.
White
I guess.
Guilt.
Yeah. And so like they'll see someone, like one example was like blackface. And so they'll see someone do like a face mask, like that's like a black face mask, and they'll call it blackface. And it's like they're speaking on behalf of the black community. Like no one who's black is saying that.
Yeah.
Like I promise you they're not offended over that.
Oh, ma'am.
But they get offended over it. On behalf of the black community.
And it makes us look like a joke.
And it makes, yeah, exactly.
Not the black community, obviously, when I say us, but people of color look like a joke. And for black people, it makes your struggle, it minimizes it.
Yeah.
So much.
Exactly. It makes it look like a joke, exactly.
Insanity! Another thing is that a lot of white people don't realize that they're the perpetrators of the racism that they're trying to fight against.
Yeah.
I don't think you like Dear White People, do you?
No. I watched, like, the first season.
And you weren't into it.
I
ate that shit up. And it's probably because I'm not black, so, like, seeing that probably as a black person, I can't even imagine what that was like. But I learned a shit ton, especially about, like, African and black relationships. Like, I feel like they did a good part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not part. A good job at that.
Yeah.
But, obviously, so my experience coming at it as a non-black person is a lot different, but I ate that shit the fuck up. And there's a very, in season two, which obviously you didn't get that far, the main character, Sam, she has a white boyfriend. This is gonna be a spoiler, but I don't feel like any of y'all are gonna watch this shit. He calls the police at a party.
I did watch this.
And the police hold up one of his black friends at gunpoint. And it is a huge thing because, obviously, like, that's fucking insane. He didn't, the only thing that man had done at the party was, I don't know, the same crime everyone else was committing, which was breathing in a frat house.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was insanity. But that idea where that white man, who is the white liberal in the situation, called the police on a black man who ended up with the gun pointed at his head while that white guy got to go home safe and sound without the trauma of almost dying,
mm-hmm.
is the issue.
Yeah.
Like,
it's such a good example.
You're the one that's doing this.
Yeah.
And to be so caught up in your own wanting to do something right and wanting to make up, recuperate for your white guilt, just because you have that white guilt doesn't mean anyone else needs to coddle you or hold you like a baby.
Yeah.
And explain to you why people wearing black face masks is not not what offensive. Blackface, cultural appropriation. No,
at all.
It is skincare, babe.
Yeah, and something else I've seen recently, I don't, that's kind of the same thing, I guess, but with the election, like, first night, like, election night was kind of shitty, because mm-hmm. it looked really bad at first, mm-hmm. and it was, like, when Michigan was still red, and, like, I think Florida was, like, leaning red or whatever, mm-hmm. and on TikTok and Twitter, I don't know if you saw this, but people, like, people who were liberal, like, white liberals, were on there, like, oh, Michigan, if you don't flip blue, we're not giving you clean water, like, you're not getting clean water, you're not getting hurricane relief. And I was like, man. That is, like, the, like, peak.
Antithesis.
Peak white liberal.
Literally.
Because I was like, I immediately was like, how do they not see what's wrong with what they're saying? Because, like, do they not understand that Flint, Michigan specifically has...
Came out.
Yeah.
And did everything that white liberals couldn't.
Everything. But they're in Flint, Michigan is, like, a predominantly black area. So, like, do you not see the problem with what you're saying? Like, oh, we're not going to give you clean water. And on top of that, like, this was a problem under Obama's administration, too.
Absolutely.
And they didn't get any help from that. So, like, why would Joe Biden all of a sudden come through and be like, oh, my God, I'm going to give you, like, clean water and Flint and help you and all this stuff? So, it's like...
Let alone, why use that as a bargaining tool?
It's such... There's such a... Like,
those are children that are in there that you are making a joke out of.
Little Miss Flint is, like, 14
She is... older.
Yeah, but she started when she was, like, 10.
And she still doesn't have clean water. And no. She talks about it, too, on her social media. She's like, look at all these people, mostly white people, by the way, if you're going to take a note for that, that took advantage of me when I was this age, when I was 8 or however old she was.
Yeah.
And look at me now. I have no clean water still.
Yeah.
To this day, my family is paying taxes for water that we're not getting.
Exactly. It's insane.
And that's kind of the whole idea, you know? It's what happens after the media exposure, what happens after the boom of votes, what happens after, you know, everything kind of implodes in favor of white people or black people. You know, it's the same thing if what happens after the presidential election, whether or not Trump or Biden won, or even if we go back 4 years, whether or not Trump or Hillary won, you know, Hillary Clinton could have won in 2016, and we still could have had, or probably still would have had, the Black Lives Matter uprisal that we had this summer.
Yeah.
And, or maybe it would have taken a 4 more years. I don't know. I'm not, I can't predict shit. But my, what I'm trying to say is, when you're done with people of color, and when you're done using them for what you need to use them for, especially black people of color, especially indigenous people, they still have to exist.
Yeah.
You know, they don't stop existing once you're done using them.
Yeah.
And that's all I ask you to understand as a white liberal or anyone listening to this. If you are Caucasian and you think that you might be fighting for the right side, but you don't know that you are, maybe consider what happens to the people that you're fighting for after you're done.
Exactly.
After you're done posting your black square, what happens the next day, the next week, what happens the next month? Because you posted that black square, let's say June 3rd, fucking June 5th, Tamir Rice gets shot down. What are you doing then?
Yeah.
Because it looks like your square didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So let's try another approach, maybe.
Yeah.
Looks like you arguing with someone about how their opinion is invalid or whatever in the YouTube comments, you know, sure, it made your friends be like, oh, queen, period, you tell them, you know, you got all that hype from them. There are still hungry children of color in the country that are trying to get welfare, that are trying to get any sort of benefits, but you're not fighting for them.
Yeah.
You're fighting someone's grandpa in the YouTube comments. You see how that's not getting
doing
us
nothing
anywhere, ma'am?
At all. And they're like, that's enough activism.
Yeah. And then when people of color and when black women come out and they actually do shit and get shit done, you take credit for it.
Yeah.
And you say, well, as a registered Democrat, it actually was me.
Literally the Me Too movement. That literally is peak.
Oh.
Because it was started by a black woman.
Yes, ma'am.
And then... Some, I think, some white actress.
Yeah.
I think. Kind of
you
took over
think.
That.
much
to think about.
And that, I think that's kind of, I wish I could leave y'all on a note of like, but it's okay. because blah, blah, blah. But that's the problem, is you always want to be left on that note. Like, these movies, for example, that have these white savior complexes, they are always era pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always taking place in the past. For example, you know that movie Saving Mr. Greenwald? That's not right.
Green Book?
Green Book, yes. And the racist driver or whatever.
Yeah.
Girl, that movie had the audacity. So these movies, they take place in the past. That's one movie. That's one example. Another example is the one I was talking about earlier, The Help. Another example is that one with the black football player and that white woman tried...
The Blind Spot, something like that.
She takes him in. Another example is... what's that movie when they go to the spaceships? In space, and they got the black people in NASA.
Hidden Figures.
All of these movies take place in the past so that you can watch white people do shit in them, feel good about yourself as a white person, and they don't tell you about how it's going on still today.
Yeah.
So you get to remove yourself from that whole conversation that's still going on today. You get to, your heart warms a little bit. And then you get to leave that movie theater. And meanwhile, while there's still rallies happening because innocent black men are dying, you get to go home to your suburbia and feel really nice and comforted because you saw Ryan Reynolds hug a black guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, racism is over.
Dead.
For example, Hidden Figures, there's a scene, very powerful scene. I watched the movie 8th grade. I was like, this shit.
Yeah.
This is anti-racism at its finest. This is activism. The scene where the guy... breaks down the bathroom sign and is like, we don't have black people at NASA. We're just all the same or some shit. I don't know. Hidden Figures was based on a true story. Mm-hmm. And in the true story, that scene never happened.
Oh, like, they literally just threw it in there. They're like, we need a white savior in here somewhere.
They're like, white people need to see themselves being good. Otherwise, they won't want to watch the movie.
Which is, that's literally why
they have
to do it.
It's like, but babe, what about reality? Because that's not what happened in reality. And not only that, that's not what's happening in reality. And that man, he wasn't a real person. He was just supposed to be like a conglomeration of NASA executives, that white man that tore down the sign.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, where did that come from if not a single NASA executive did that shit? Did anything like that shit?
Yeah.
Why did this character who was supposed to represent a conglomeration of them knock down this, you know, whites only bathroom?
Yeah.
Like,
that's not
that
that's
never not happened.
And it really taking away from this story of these
the
actual
real
black
struggle
women.
That they went through.
Like, that's just not, they make it look so, like, oh, racism died back in the 60s. Like, it's not that bad now. But, like, there's no way that actually happened. Like, they probably went through much worse, like, way worse than what they even showed in the movie.
But then you look at the creators and you look at the director and it's white all across. And you don't notice the issue until you compare it to black productions. Because
black productions, babe,
they'll tell you, hey, look, this is something that's happening still today. The Klansman.
Crazy. Yeah.
Did you ever watch that?
I did.
That movie is great because not only is it, you know, talking about race and all this shit going on, the ending of the movie is today.
Mm-hmm.
It is modern clips of Trump, the clips of the Charlottesville rally. They put that in that movie because it doesn't stop when the movie ends. It doesn't end when the credits are done rolling, babe. They're still going on. You know, Hidden Figures was great to watch and be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
They got to the moon. Everything's fine. But watching The Klansman, you're like, oh, wow.
It was the same thing with Get Out. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And they had the alternate ending, which was, like, honestly, the realistic ending where...
Wait, what was the alternate ending?
Did you not see
it? I didn't know that.
I don't know if y'all are going to watch it, but if you are, then you might want to skip forward because I'm about to spoil the end. But...
It's been years.
If you haven't seen it by now, that's on you.
Grow up.
At the end, when she's, like, still alive and he's trying to kill her, like, Rose or whatever, his girlfriend, you know, talking about? And then the police come.
Uh-huh.
So, instead of his friend being there, the police just come and they don't understand, like, what's happening.
Uh-huh.
So, he gets arrested and put in jail. Because it's, like, it's a white woman.
Wait, was that in the movie?
Yeah. There was, like, an alternate ending that he put in there.
I don't even remember that. Oh, my God.
They showed it, like, I think after the credits.
That's why.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But, yeah, and then he's just in jail for, like, I don't know if he killed her or not.
Very interesting.
So, yeah, that's the one... which is very telling.
So that's what I'm trying to say. If you look at white productions and they make it seem like racism is a thing of the past, yeah. And then if you look at black productions and they tell you and they show you real evidence of racism today, one of those is going to make you more uncomfortable than the other.
That's so true. I've never even thought. Now I'm thinking of all these movies.
You're like, she, dog.
Oh, what's that one? Slim, Queen and Slim. Did you ever watch that?
No, what is that?
It's like this, it's basically like a Bonnie and Clyde type okay. thing, but like this black couple, and they kill a police officer. And then they're on the run.
Oh my god!
But literally, actually...
Why does it sound like an IGTV original?
Literally... It was a movie that literally messed me up.
Oh, God. Like, what happened?
Do you want to know the ending?
Yeah.
So they go through all this trouble and it's just them running, like, from the police for, like, the whole movie. And they're trying to get over to, like, Cuba or some shit.
Cuba?
Like, get out of the country.
It's always Cuba.
And they literally are driving to, like, this private jet. Like, they have all these connections, whatever. They're driving to this private jet and they're literally about to get on the jet and the police show up. And they just literally get fucking shot. And and that's just the end of the movie. And it was literally like
bro, I'm saying.
But, like, that's honestly the more realistic ending.
Yeah. Because,
which is, like, sad.
One ending, you know, they get, white people get to go home to their families and happy.
Yeah.
The other ending, a black man and a black woman are dead.
Yeah.
And that's how it happens in real life versus how it happens in your fantasies.
Exactly.
And that Green Book, good example of that. Mm-hmm. He also didn't give permission for his story to be used the way it was.
His family was really mad about it.
His family was extremely angry. I think one thing specifically that was a temper point, I guess you could say, was that the white man in the movie was kind of telling the black guy about his own culture.
That's what I was going to say. They literally painted him as this guy who was, like, disconnected from black culture, which he wasn't.
He was not.
So they literally, like...
They made it seem like if you were an educated black guy, you had to be disconnected exactly. from blackness in order to succeed.
Exactly.
So let this white guy tell you about it.
They literally, like, completely changed this real man's story to make the white guy look better.
You can be black and you can have excellence at the same time.
Exactly.
You do not need to erase your blackness to have some sort of achievement. And you do not need to have a white person teach you your blackness back, ma'am.
Yeah.
No. Sir, and that is not how it happened
they
either.
They really missed the mark on that one.
That is not how it happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little pathetic.
It's very pathetic.
And
yeah.
I think it's more indicative of the issues that we have today than white conservatism. And that was kind mm-hmm. of where we started, and that's kind of where we're ending. Normally I like to try to end these on a positive note, but I always say that. Like, every episode I'm like, I try to end these on a positive note, but damn, y'all, the world does suck, so I don't really know what to tell you. But, like, if I'm doing that every episode, when's the last time I ended this shit on a positive note? Damn. Let me think of something good.
Yeah.
Remember Obama? Yeah. Well, he bombed Middle East,
so. Oh, I was gonna say. I don't know if that's a happy.
Talk about Pakistan. All those little babies, they're dead. Yikes.
I literally was like, Thanksgiving is next week, but that's not even...
That's not good either, babe. Yikes. Not the harmony. I think my little note I want to end it on is, if you are white and you are a liberal, just shut up.
Yeah, just listen.
I think Malcolm X in his movie, the only... way white people are portrayed in that movie is they're either on the sidelines or they're a villain.
Yeah.
Because duh, it's a movie about black people. Meanwhile, the Help was written from the perspective of the white woman who wrote the book.
Yeah.
So in that movie with Malcolm X, a white woman comes up to Malcolm and, oh my god, not me talking about him like we're on first name basis. I'm actually in love with him, believe it or not.
Yes.
So anyways, a white woman comes up to him. It's like, what can white people like me do to, you know, help the struggle, help the movement? What can we do? And he says nothing and keeps walking.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I would like to end it.
That's a, yeah, perfect ending, I think.
Yeah, so just shut up. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's hyperbole. Oh, my white liberals out there, thank you so much.
I love you.
if you would like to give me some more rights sometime.
That'd be fun. That'd be cute.
Maybe if I set up a GoFundMe, you guys can share it on your Twitter, put it in your bio.
Something like that.
I take back everything else I said. When the race war begins, I will take your side immediately.
With quickness.
With a quickness, yes. Yeah. Sydney's kind of, I mean, I hate to say it, but Sydney's kind of winning right now. I mean, in terms of race war.
No.
Statistics, do you think mixed people are going to be lower than black and white people or higher than black people, just like in the middle, like a house slave situation?
I feel like I'm gonna get canceled no matter what I say.
I think that's a good idea. I think no matter what happens, the black woman who stars in this podcast mm-hmm. episode should come out of it mm-hmm. with no career.
Yes.
Just scathed, yes. shred to pieces. Exactly. Meanwhile, I get to be like fine and I get to make money off this episode. I think that would be a really good metaphor. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. My name's Aisha.
I'm Sydney.
And you just listened to another episode of your local Brown Girl podcast. Have a great rest of your day, guys.